This is the first tape in a series on the rubrics of the traditional Roman Rite liturgical books. This first tape covers the apostolic letter given motu proprio by Pope John the 23rd on July 25th, 1960, entitled Rubricarum Instructum, in which a body of rubrics for the Roman Missal and Breviary are approved. The motu proprio was accompanied by seven documents issued by the Sacred Congregation of Rites, the Sacra Congregatio Ritum. The first document is a general decree in which the new codex of rubrics are promulgated. The second part are the rubrics of the breviary and missal themselves, consisting of three parts. The first part being the general rubrics, rubricae generales, pertaining to both the missal and the breviary. The second part, the Rubricae Generales Breviarii Romani, are the rubrics, the general rubrics, that pertain only to the breviary. And the third part is the Rubricae Generales Missalis Romani, the general rubrics pertaining to the Roman Missal. The third document is the calendar of the breviary and missal, which was revised at this time. The fourth document were a list of variations in the breviary and missal. The fifth are the changes in the Roman Martyrology. The sixth is a declaration on preserving certain particular calendars. And the seventh is a set of guidelines for publishers of liturgical books. I will start off by summarizing informally the general rubrics of both the breviary and the missal. That is part one of the second document that contains the general rubrics that pertain to both of those liturgical books together. Traditional missals issued after 1960, the Holy Father's letter, Rubricatum Instructum, and the three parts on rubrics, or at least the general rubrics and the general rubrics for the missal, are published in the missal itself after the three letters from earlier popes, Pope Pius V's Quo Primum Tempora, Pope Clement VIII's Cum Sanctissimum, and Urban VIII's Si Quid. And these are in the missals, which have the subtitle Ex Decreto Sacrosancti Concilii Tridentini Restitutum Summorum Pontificum Cura Recognitum, from the decree of the Holy Tridentine Council as restored and recognized at the under the care of the Supreme Pontiffs. After this period, the missals do not bear that subtitle. So this then is the last rubrical reform before the changes introduced immediately after the Second Vatican Council. I now go to part one of the general rubrics, and these general rubrics pertain to both the office, the breviary that is, and the missal. I will summarize by chapters. This part one of the general rubrics consists of 19 chapters. My purpose is not to go over every detail, but simply to give an overall summary of what is contained so that it may be possible to get a general idea of the scope of the new rubrics issued in 1960 and where items, details will be found on specific topics. Part one, then, headed Rubrice Generales, the general rubrics, is divided into 19 chapters. The first chapter consists of general norms and is very brief. The second chapter discusses the liturgical day in general. It defines the liturgical day as lasting from one midnight to the next, or one might say from matins to compline. There are, however, more solemn days on which the office begins with first vespers of the preceding day, that is, the day preceding the actual day. This occurs on Sundays and higher class feasts, and more about this will be said later. It mentions a commemoration, which is not a complete liturgical celebration of a day, and also discusses or names various types of days: a Sunday, a feria, that is a weekday, a vigil, a feast day, or an octave day, and these are celebrated according to a precedence that is given in a table associated with the rubrics. Liturgical days are of the first, second, third, or fourth class. In the previous rubrics that were used up until 1960, there was a rather involved set of precedences and ranks of feasts, semi-doubles, doubles, simples, and so forth, which is simplified in the 1960 revision to only four classes. Chapter 3 discusses Sundays and provides that Sundays are the first or the second class. There are no third or fourth class Sundays. Sundays of the first class are the more important Sundays, such as those of Advent and Lent, those of the Passion, the Resurrection, Low Sunday, and Pentecost Sunday. Easter and Pentecost Sundays are feasts of the first class with octaves. In the pre-1960 rubrics, there were a number of feasts which had octaves, that is, following days that achieved a higher class as a result of the feast day on which they were based. Most of these were done away with. The only ones now remaining as of the 1960 revision are Easter and Pentecost. All of the other Sundays of the year are second-class Sundays. The Sunday office begins with first vespers of the Saturday preceding and ends with compline of the Sunday. The rest of Chapter 3 discusses some technical points of determining what happens when certain major feast days fall on a Sunday. I won't go into those details at this time. Chapter 4 discusses ferias, which is a term given to each individual day of the week except Sunday. Ferias may be of the first, second, third, or fourth class. Depending on the importance of the feria, the class would be higher or lower. For instance, failures of the first class are Ash Wednesday and the failures of Holy Week, whereas fourth class failures are those which have no special significance of themselves. Chapter 5 discusses vigils, which is a liturgical day that precedes a feast and serves as a preparation for it. Vigils are of the first, second, or third class. There are no fourth class vigils. And again, according to the importance of the feast, the class would be higher or lower, so that the vigil of Christmas would be a first class vigil, whereas a vigil of the third class might be the vigil of St. Lawrence. Again, all of these classes are prescribed in the calendar that accompanies the rubrics. Chapter 6 discusses feasts and the calendar. In subpart A, it talks about the nature and classification of feasts. The feast is a liturgical day on which one of the mysteries of the Lord, or veneration of the Blessed Virgin Mary, or the angels, or the saints, or the Beati, are involved in the worship. Feasts may be of the first, second, or third classes. There are no fourth class feasts. Feasts of the first class have a first Vespers, that is, a Vespers that is celebrated the evening preceding the actual day, whereas the other classes of feasts begin with Matins, generally the first hour of the church day. Feasts may be universal or particular. The universal feasts are listed in the universal calendar of the church. Particular feasts are those which may be celebrated according to particular local customs, whether it be a religious order or a particular diocese. There are a number of examples given, which I won't go into. For instance, the feast of the patron saint of the diocese would be a particular feast day on a diocesan liturgical calendar and would have a higher class as a result of that than the saint's feast day might have in the universal calendar. Part B of Chapter 6 discusses the calendar and the feasts that are to be listed in it. It discusses the universal calendar, that is, a list of the universal feasts of the church, particular calendars, diocesan calendars, religious calendars for religious orders. And again, it's not my purpose to go into the details of these, just to summarize the basic ideas. Part C is the proper day of feasts and sets principles for when a particular saint would be noted on the calendar. Most of the information here is not of practical interest, because once the church makes the decision, the day is entered on the calendar, and it's not practically significant why a particular day was chosen. However, normally feasts of saints are assigned to the day the saint died, or, as the rubrics say, was born to eternal life. Chapter 7 talks about octaves, which is a celebration of the highest feasts of the church extended over a period of 8 successive days, and thereby called octaves, from the Latin word octo, meaning 8. There are only 3 octaves now celebrated. I mentioned Christmas and Easter before, and there is also Pentecost. Octaves are of the first or second class, no third or fourth class octaves. Easter and Pentecost have first class octaves, and Christmas has a second class octave. Chapter 8 discusses the seasons of the year, and This is perhaps one of the most important sections of the general rubrics, since the seasons of the year control a good number of the ordinary rubrics of both the missal and the breviary, since certain general principles of celebrations apply to particular seasons of the year. So the seasons of the year, as here mentioned, and I will give them in general rather than giving all of the details, the first is the season of Advent, the second, which in the Latin is Tempus Adventus, which you'll see the Latin terms in the Missal and Office, so I'll mention those as we go along. The second season is the season of Christmastide, the Tempus Natalitium, and that is further subdivided into the season of Christmas, the Tempus Nativitatis, and the season of Epiphany, the Tempus Epiphaniae. The third season is the season of Septuagesima, Tempus Septuagesimae. The fourth is the Lenten season, Tempus Quadragesimale. The Latin word for Lent is quadragesima, from the Latin word for 40, referring to the 40 days before Easter, just as Septuagesima, the Latin word for 70, refers to 70 days before Easter. The Lenten season is further subdivided into the season of Lent proper, the Tempus Quadragesimae, and Passiontide, the Tempus Passionis, which is the 2 weeks before Easter. The fifth main season is Paschaltide, Tempus Paschale, which is subdivided into three parts, the season of Easter proper, the Tempus Paschatis, Ascensiontide, the Tempus Ascensionis, and the octave of Pentecost, the Octava Pentecostes. The sixth main season is what is called Per Annum, literally throughout the year, and that takes place after the Paschal season has ended and before the Advent season. It's the longest season of the year. Chapter 9 of the General Rubrics mentions the Blessed Virgin Mary, the office of the Blessed Virgin Mary on Saturday, which substitutes for the ferial or normal weekday office of Saturday, when Saturday is only a feria of the fourth class. Otherwise, in honor to the Blessed Virgin, Saturday is given over to an office and a mass to her. Chapter 10 discusses the greater and lesser litanies. These have certain masses associated with them and certain rites associated with them. I won't go into the details at the moment. Chapter 11 discusses the precedence of liturgical days, and this gives the general layout of the classes of the types of days that are categorized into each of the four classes. So you have the first class, second class, third class, and fourth class. Each of these is given in a list in a specific numerical order, so that even within a given class, for instance, the first class, the Feast of Christmas would take precedence over, say, the Vigil of Pentecost, both of which are liturgical days of the first class. Again, this normally is not a matter to be calculated, as it is given in the calendar, But beyond that, if one uses an ordo, particularly a detailed ordo, the information is calculated for you, and you are told what office and what mass applies to a given day for a given year. That is the purpose of an ordo. It's something similar to a calendar, a civil calendar, where first of all the person publishing the calendar will get the month started off on the proper days, and will then indicate when the movable civil holidays fall in any given year. So in effect, the ordo applies the general calendar to the specific year. Chapter 12 talks about the occurrence of liturgical days. Now the word occurrence in Latin, occurrencia, has a technical meaning. Occurrence is the falling of two or more offices on one and the same day. Normally, when we talk about this, it is what we call an accidental occurrence. That is, in a given year, two feast days, for instance, might occur together. Actually, occurrence in Latin almost has the meaning of conflict, a conflict of days. For instance, it might be possible for a first-class feast, such as the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, to fall on a Sunday, in which case the precedence of the table of precedences would determine how to handle the conflict of those two days. Now, occurrence can be accidental or perpetual. An accidental occurrence is an occurrence or a conflict or a simultaneous falling of two feast days, liturgical days, on the same calendar day. And this is called accidental because it might occur one year and not another year. It just depends on the calendar for a given year. There is another case which is called a perpetual occurrence, that is a perpetual conflict, where two liturgical days fall always on the same calendar day, and those two are dealt with in different ways. Chapter 13 discusses the accidental occurrence of the liturgical days and their transference. Now, there are two principles here. You might have, for instance, a feast day of the first class and a feast day of the third class falling on the same calendar day in a given year. In that case, the table of precedences would instruct you how to handle the two. Depending on the season, the third class feast might be commemorated. That is, simply a prayer would be used for the third class feast, whereas the mass or the office would be of the first class feast. On the other hand, you have another case, which is called transferentia in Latin, which is used as a way to resolve an occurrence, a conflict, if the feasts involved are both of the first class. In that case, rather than demoting the status of one of the first class feasts to the other, the one of the first class feasts, the one that is the lower in the ranking, is transferred to another day. Chapter 14 discusses the perpetual occurrence of liturgical days and their new assignment. Now, this is not a matter of practical concern for the priest because this is taken care of in the calendar itself according to certain principles. So the calendar and certainly the ordo would indicate the resolution of this matter. Chapter 15 talks about the concurrence of liturgical days, in Latin, concurrentia. Now, just as occurrentia and occurrence implies a conflict of days falling on the same calendar day, a concurrence has to do with that question of the Vespers. Remember that Sundays and liturgical days of the first class have what are called first Vespers. That is, the importance of the liturgical celebration is such that it starts not when the church day usually starts at Matins, but begins a little bit earlier at what is called first Vespers, that is, the afternoon or the evening of the preceding day. Now, you can conceive that you may have the normal Vespers of a given day coming into concurrence, that is, con meaning at the same time, coming into concurrence with the first Vespers of a following day. For instance, let's say that Monday is a feria, just a simple weekday, and it has a normal Vespers. However, let us say that the following Tuesday is a first-class feast of a saint, let's say the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, and you will have the Vespers of the feria coming into concurrence with the first Vespers of the feast whose proper day is the following day. This is called concurrence, when the Vespers of one day come into conflict with the Vespers of the anticipated Vespers of the next day. And again, the table of precedence and associated with the rubrics will tell you what to do in a case like that, or your ordo will tell you what to do. Chapter 16 has to do with commemorations. And commemorations are divided into privileged and ordinary. Privileged commemorations are higher level commemorations, that is, of a Sunday or a liturgical day of the first class or so, and an ordinary commemoration is one of of lesser importance. The reason for making the distinction has to do with the office and mass in a general way. Privileged commemorations are commemorated both at Lauds and at Vespers, whereas ordinary commemorations are commemorated only at Lauds and in low masses. There is a point made about the office of St. Peter and St. Paul, where it happens that if the feast of one of those saints appears on a given day, there is always a commemoration of the other. They are considered almost like a pair. There are a few details about commemorations having to do with the kind of mass. For instance, if there is a sung mass, the commemoration is not made, whereas if the mass is a low mass, the commemoration is made. The rubrics have been becoming stricter and stricter as the years go by concerning the number of commemorations or prayers at Mass. At one point, I think up to 7 were permitted, but in this century, through the various rubrical reforms of the popes, the number has been cut considerably back, so that in the most liberal case, only 3 prayers at Mass, say 3 collects, are permitted. If by any manipulation of the calendar, it should happen that, say, four prayers would be called for, including commemorations. One of them is always dropped since the maximum is three, and the maximum is actually less depending upon the rank, so that, for instance, a feast day of the first class normally has only one prayer, not even three.